feel a thin, sharp edge pushing into the skin under my jaw. I don't understand. I shouldn't be given a choice. Who is this monster? I've never heard of one who would break rules. I answer the only way I can. Do it! I spit through my teeth. Just do it! I don't want to be a filthy parasite. I wait for the knife, and my heart is aching. Each beat has a name. Jamie, Jamie, Jamie. What will happen to you now?
Clever,
the man mutters, and it doesn't sound like he's speaking to me.
Must be a seeker, and that means a trap. How did they know?
The steel disappears from my throat, only to be replaced by a hand as hard as iron. I can barely breathe under his grip.
Where are the rest of them?
He demands, squeezing.
It's just me,
I rasp. I can't lead him to Jamie. What will Jamie do when I don't come back? Jamie is hungry! I throw my elbow into his gut, and this really hurts. His stomach muscles are as iron-hard as the hand, which is very strange. Muscles like that are the product of hard living or obsession, and the parasites have neither. He doesn't even suck in a breath at my blow. Desperate, I jab my heel into his instep. This catches him off guard, and he wobbles. I wrench away, but he grabs hold of my bag, yanking me back into his body. His hand clamps down on my throat again.
Feisty for a peace-loving body snatcher, aren't you?
His words are nonsensical. I thought the aliens were all the same. I guess they have their nut jobs, too, after all. I twist and claw, trying to break his hold. My nails catch his arm, but this just makes him tighten his hold on my throat.
I will kill you, you worthless body thief. I'm not bluffing.
Do it, then. Suddenly he gasps, and I wonder if any of my flailing limbs have made contact. I don't feel any new bruises. He lets go of my arm and grabs my hair. This must be it. He's going to cut my throat. I brace for the slice of the knife. But the hand on my throat eases up, and then his fingers are fumbling on the back of my neck, rough and warm on my skin.
Impossible, he breathes.
Something hits the floor with a thud. He's dropped the knife? I try to think of a way to get it. Maybe if I fall. The hand on my neck isn't tight enough to keep me from yanking free. I think I heard where the blade landed. He spins me around suddenly. There is a click, and light blinds my left eye. I gasp and automatically try to twist away from it. His hand tightens in my hair. The light flickers to my right eye.
I can't believe it, he whispers. You're still human.
His hands grab my face from both sides, and before I can pull free, his lips come down hard on mine. I'm frozen for half a second. No one has ever kissed me in my life. Not a real kiss. Just my parents' pecks on the cheek or forehead so many years ago. This is something I thought I would never feel. I'm not sure exactly what it feels like, though. There's too much panic, too much terror, too much adrenaline. I jerk my knee up in a sharp thrust. He chokes out a wheezing sound, and I'm free. Instead of running for the front of the house again like he expects, I duck under his arm and leap through the open doors. I think I can outrun him, even with my load. I've got a head start, and he's still making pained noises. I know where I'm going. I won't leave a path he can see in the dark. I never drop the food, and that's good. I think the granola bars are a loss, though.
Wait!
He yells.
Shut up!
I think, but I don't yell back. He's running after me. I can hear his voice getting closer.
I'm not one of them!
Sure. I keep my eyes on the sand and sprint. My dad used to say I ran like a cheetah. I was the fastest on my track team, state champion, back before the end of the world.
Listen to me!
He's still yelling at full volume.
Look! I'll prove it! Just stop and look at me!
Not likely. I pivot off the wash and flit through the mesquites.
I didn't think there was anyone left. Please, I need to talk to you.
His voice surprises me. It is too close.
I'm sorry I kissed you. That was stupid. I've just been alone so long.
Shut up. I don't say it loudly, but I know he hears. He's getting even closer. I've never been outrun before. I push my legs harder. There's a low grunt to his breathing as he speeds up, too. Something big flies into my back and I go down. I taste dirt in my mouth, and I'm pinned by something so heavy I can hardly breathe.
Wait a minute, he huffs.
He shifts his weight and rolls me over. He straddles my chest, trapping my arms under his legs. He is squishing my food. I growl and try to squirm out from under him.
Look, 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 he says.
He pulls a small cylinder from his hip pocket and twists the top. A beam of light shoots out the end. He turns the flashlight on his face. The light makes his skin yellow. It shows prominent cheekbones beside a long, thin nose and a sharply squared-off jaw. His lips are stretched into a grin, but I can see that they are full for a man. His eyebrows and lashes are bleached out from sun. But that's not what he is showing me. His eyes, clear liquid sienna in the illumination, shine with no more than human reflection. He bounces the light between left and right.
See? See? I'm just like you.
Let me see your neck. Suspicion is thick in my voice. I don't let myself believe that this is more than a trick. I don't understand the point of the charade, but I'm sure there is one. There is no hope anymore. His lips twist.
Well, that won't exactly help anything. Aren't the eyes enough? You know I'm not one of them.
Why won't you show me your neck?
Because I have a scar there, he admits.
I try to squirm out from under him again, and his hand pins my shoulder.
It's self-inflicted, he explains. I think I did a pretty good job, though it hurt like hell. I don't have all that pretty hair to cover my neck. The scar helps me blend in.
Get off me! He hesitates, then gets to his feet in one easy move, not needing to use his hands. He holds one out, palm up to me.
Please don't run away. And, I'd rather you didn't kick me again either.
I don't move. I know he can catch me if I try to run. Who are you? I whisper. He smiles wide.
My name is Jared Howe. I haven't spoken to another human being in more than 2 years, so I'm sure I must seem a little crazy to you. Please forgive that and tell me your name anyway.
Melanie, I whisper.
Melanie, he repeats. I can't tell you how delighted I am to meet you.
I grip my bag tightly, keeping my eyes on him. He reaches his hand down toward me slowly. And I take it. It isn't until I see my hand curl voluntarily around his that I realize I believe him. He helps me to my feet and doesn't release my hand when I'm up. What now? I ask guardedly.
Well, we can't stay here for long. Will you come back with me to the house? I left my bag. You beat me to the fridge.
I shake my head. He seems to realize how brittle I am, how close to breaking.
Will you wait for me here, then? He asks in a gentle voice. I'll be very quick. Let me get us some more food.
Us?
Do you really think I'm going to let you disappear? I'll follow you even if you tell me not to.
I don't want to disappear from him. How can I not trust another human completely? We are family, both part of the Brotherhood of Extinction. I don't have time. I have so far to go, and Jamie is waiting.
You're not alone, he realizes.
His expression shows uncertainty for the first time. My brother. He's just 9. And he's so frightened when I'm away. It will take me half the night to get back to him. He won't know if I've been caught. He's so hungry. As if to make my point, my stomach growls loudly. Jared's smile is back, brighter than before.
Will it help if I give you a ride?
A ride? I echo.
I'll make you a deal. You wait here while I gather more food, and I'll take you anywhere you want to go in my jeep. It's faster than running, even faster than you running.
You have a car?
Of course. Do you think I walked out here?
I think of the 6 hours it took me to walk here, and my forehead furrows.
We'll be back to your brother in no time, he promises. Don't move from this spot, okay?
I nod.
And eat something, please. I don't want your stomach to give us away.
He grins, and his eyes crinkle up, fanning lines out of the corners. My heart gives one hard thump, and I know I will wait here if it takes him all night. He is still holding my hand. He lets go slowly, his eyes not leaving mine. He takes a step backward, then pauses.
Please don't kick me, he pleads, leaning forward and grabbing my chin.
He kisses me again, and this time I feel it. His lips are softer than his hands, and hot, even in the warm desert night. A flock of butterflies riots in my stomach and steals my breath. My hands reach for him instinctively. I touch the warm skin of his cheek, the rough hair on his neck. My fingers skim over a line of puckered skin, a raised ridge right beneath the hairline. I scream. I woke up covered in sweat. Even before I was all the way awake, my fingers were on the back of my neck, tracing the short line left from the insertion. I could barely detect the faint pink blemish with my fingertips. The medicines the healer had used had done their job. Jared's poorly healed scar had never been much of a disguise. I flicked on the light beside my bed, waited for my breathing to slow, veins full of adrenaline from the realistic dream. A new dream, but in essence so much the same as the many others that had plagued me in the past months. No, not a dream. Surely a memory. I could still feel the heat of Jared's lips on mine. My hands reached out without my permission, searching across the rumpled sheet, looking for something they did not find. My heart ached when they gave up, falling to the bed limp and empty. I blinked away the unwelcome moisture in my eyes. I didn't know how much more of this I could stand. How did anyone survive this world? With these bodies whose memories wouldn't stay in the past where they should. With these emotions that were so strong I couldn't tell what I felt anymore. I was going to be exhausted tomorrow, but I felt so far from sleep that I knew it would be hours before I could relax. I might as well do my duty and get it over with. Maybe it would help me take my mind off things I'd rather not think about. I rolled off the bed and stumbled to the computer on the otherwise empty desk. It took a few seconds for the screen to glow to life, and another few seconds to open my mail program. It wasn't hard to find the Seeker's address. I only had 4 contacts. The Seeker, the healer, my new employer, and his wife, my comforter. There was another human with my host, Melanie Strider, I typed, not bothering with a greeting. His name is Jamie Strider. He is her brother. For a panicked moment, I wondered at her control. All this time, and I'd never even guessed at the boy's existence. Not because he didn't matter to her, but because she protected him more fiercely than other secrets I'd unraveled. Did she have other secrets this big? This important? So sacred that she kept them even from my dreams? Was she that strong? My fingers trembled as I keyed the rest of the information. I think he's a young adolescent now, perhaps 13. They were living in a temporary camp, and I believe it was north of the town of Cave Creek in Arizona. That was several years ago, though. Still, you could compare a map to the lines I remembered before. As always, I'll tell you if I get anything more. I sent it off. As soon as it was gone, terror washed through me. Not Jamie! Her voice in my head was as clear as my own spoken aloud. I shuddered in horror. Even as I struggled with the fear of what was happening, I was gripped with the insane desire to email the Seeker again and apologize for sending her my crazy dreams, to tell her I was half asleep, and to pay no attention to the silly message I'd sent. The desire was not my own. I shut off the computer. "I hate you!" the voice snarled in my head. "Then maybe you should leave," I snapped. The sound of my voice, answering her aloud, made me shudder again. She hadn't spoken to me since the first moments I'd been here. There was no doubt that she was getting stronger, just like the dreams. And there was no question about it. I was going to have to visit my comforter tomorrow. Tears of disappointment and humiliation welled in my eyes at the thought. I went back to bed, put a pillow over my face, and tried to think of nothing at all. Chapter 5 Uncomforted. "Hello there, Wanderer. Won't you take a seat and make yourself at home?" I hesitated on the threshold of the comforter's office, one foot in and one foot out. She smiled, just a tiny movement at the corners of her mouth. It was much easier to read facial expressions now. The little muscle twitches and shifts had become familiar through months of exposure. I could see that the comforter found my reluctance a bit amusing. At the same time, I could sense her frustration that I was still uneasy coming to her. With a quiet sigh of resignation, I walked into the small, brightly colored room and took my usual seat, the puffy red one, the one farthest from where she sat. Her lips pursed. To avoid her gaze, I stared through the open windows at the clouds scuttling past the sun. The faint tang of ocean brine blew softly through the room. "So, Wanderer, it's been a while since you've come to see me." I met her eyes guiltily. "I did leave a message about that last appointment. I had a student who requested some of my time." "Yes, I know." She smiled the tiny smile again. "I got your message." She was attractive for an older woman, as humans went. She'd let her hair stay a natural gray. It was soft, tending toward white rather than silver, and she wore it long, pulled back in a loose ponytail. Her eyes were an interesting green color I'd never seen on anyone else. "I'm sorry," I said, since she seemed to be waiting for a response. "That's all right. I understand. It's difficult for you to come here. You wish so much that it wasn't necessary. It's never been necessary for you before. This frightens you." I stared down at the wooden floor. "Yes, Comforter." "I know I've asked you to call me Kathy."
"Yes,
Kathy." She laughed lightly. "You are not at ease with human names yet, are you, Wanderer?"
"No. To be honest, it seems like a surrender."
I looked up to see her nod slowly. "Well, I can understand why you especially would feel that way." I swallowed loudly when she said that and stared again at the floor. "Let's talk about something easier for a moment," Kathy suggested. "Do you continue to enjoy your calling?"
"I do."
This was easier. "I've begun a new semester. I wondered if it would get tiresome, repeating the same material, but so far it doesn't. Having new ears makes the stories new again." "I hear good things about you from Kurt. He says your class is among the most requested at the university." My cheeks warmed a bit at this praise.
"That's nice to hear. How is your partner?"
"Kurt is wonderful, thank you. Our hosts are in excellent shape for their ages. We have many years ahead of us, I think." I was curious if she would stay on in this world, if she would move to another human host when the time came, or if she would leave.
but I didn't want to ask any questions that might move us into the more difficult areas of discussion. I enjoy teaching, I said instead. It's somewhat related to my calling with the sea weeds, so that makes it easier than something unfamiliar. I'm indebted to Kurt for requesting me. They're lucky to have you. Kathy smiled warmly. Do you know how rare it is for a professor of history to have experienced even 2 planets in the curriculum? Yet you've lived a term on almost all of them, and the origin to boot. There isn't a school on this planet that wouldn't love to steal you away from us. Kurt plots ways to keep you busy so you have no time to consider moving. Honorary professor, I corrected her. Kathy smiled, and then took a deep breath, her smile fading. You haven't been to see me in so long. I was wondering if your problems were resolving themselves. But then it occurred to me that perhaps the reason for your absence was that they were getting worse. I stared down at my hands and said nothing. My hands were light brown, a tan that never faded whether I spent time in the sun or not. One dark freckle marked the skin just above my left wrist. My nails were cut short. I disliked the feeling of long nails. They were unpleasant when they brushed the skin wrong. And my fingers were so long and thin. The added length of fingernails made them look strange, even for a human. She cleared her throat after a minute. I'm guessing my intuition was right. Kathy, I said her name slowly, stalling. Why did you keep your human name? Did it make you feel more at one? With your host, I mean? I would have liked to know about Kurt's choice as well, but it was such a personal question. It would have been wrong to ask anyone besides Kurt for the answer, even his partner. I worried that I'd already been too impolite, but she laughed. Heavens no, Wanderer. Haven't I told you this? Maybe not, since it's not my job to talk but to listen. Most of the souls I speak with don't need as much encouragement as you do. Did you know I came to Earth in one of the very first placements? Before the humans had any idea we were here? I had human neighbors on both sides. Kurt and I had to pretend to be our hosts for several years. Even after we'd settled the immediate area, you never knew when a human might be near. So, Kathy just became who I was. Besides, the translation of my former name was 14 words long and did not shorten prettily. She grinned. The sunlight slanting through the window caught her eyes and sent their silver-green reflection dancing on the wall. For a moment, the emerald irises glowed iridescent. I'd had no idea that this soft, cozy woman had been a part of the front line. It took me a minute to process that. I stared at her, surprised, and suddenly more respectful. I'd never taken comforters very seriously, never had a need before now. They were for those who struggled, for the weak, and it shamed me to be here. Knowing Kathy's history made me feel slightly less awkward with her. She understood strength. Did it bother you? I asked, pretending to be one of them. No, not really. You see, this host was a lot to get used to. There was so much that was new, sensory overload. Following the set pattern was quite as much as I could handle at first. And Kurt? You chose to stay with your host's spouse? After it was over? This question was more pointed, and Kathy grasped that at once. She shifted in her seat, pulling her legs up and folding them under her. She gazed thoughtfully at a spot just over my head as she answered. Yes, I chose Kurt, and he chose me. At first, of course, it was random chance, an assignment. We bonded, naturally, from spending so much time together, sharing the danger of our mission. As the university's president, Kurt had many contacts, you see. Our house was an insertion facility, naturally. We would entertain often.
Humans would come through our door, and our kind would leave. It all had to be very quick and quiet. You know the violence these hosts are prone to. We lived every day with the knowledge that we could meet a final end at any moment. There was constant excitement and frequent fear. All very good reasons why Kurt and I might have formed an attachment and decided to stay together when secrecy was no longer necessary. And I could lie to you, assuage your fears by telling you that these were the reasons. But she shook her head, and then seemed to settle deeper into her chair, her eyes boring into me. In so many millennia, the humans never did figure love out. How much is physical? How much in the mind? How much accident and how much fate? Why did perfect matches crumble and impossible couples thrive? I don't know the answers any better than they did. Love simply is where it is. My host loved Kurt's host, and that love did not die when the ownership of the minds changed. She watched me carefully, reacting with a slight frown when I slumped in my seat. Melanie still grieves for Jared, she stated. I felt my head nod without willing the action. You grieve for him. I closed my eyes. The dreams continue. Every night, I mumbled. Tell me about them. Her voice was soft, persuasive. I don't like to think about them. I know. Try. It might help. How? How will it help to tell you that I see his face every time I close my eyes? That I wake up and cry when he's not there? That the memories are so strong I can't separate hers from mine anymore? I stopped abruptly, clenching my teeth. Kathy pulled a white handkerchief from her pocket and offered it to me. When I didn't move, she got up, walked over to me, and dropped it in my lap. She sat on the arm of my chair and waited. I held on stubbornly for half a minute. Then I snatched the little square of fabric angrily and wiped my eyes.
I hate this.
Everybody cries their first year. These emotions are so impossible. We're all children for a bit, whether we intended that or not. I used to tear up every time I saw a pretty sunset. The taste of peanut butter would sometimes do that, too. She patted the top of my head, then trailed her fingers gently through the lock of hair I always kept tucked behind my ear. Such pretty, shiny hair, she noted. Every time I see you, it's shorter. Why do you keep it that way? Already in tears, I didn't feel like I had much dignity to defend. Why claim that it was easier to care for, as I usually did? After all, I'd come here to confess and get help. I might as well get on with it. It bothers her. She likes it long. She didn't gasp, as I half expected she would. Kathy was good at her job. Her response was only a second late and only slightly incoherent. She's still that present? The appalling truth tumbled from my lips. When she wants to be. Our history bores her. She's more dormant while I'm working, but she's there all right. Sometimes I feel like she's as present as I am. My voice was only a whisper by the time I was done. Wanderer! Kathy exclaimed, horrified. Why didn't you tell me it was that bad? How long has it been this way? It's getting worse. Instead of fading, she seems to be growing stronger. It's not as bad as the healer's case yet. We spoke of Kevin, do you remember? She hasn't taken control. She won't. I won't let that happen. The pitch of my voice climbed. Of course it won't happen, she assured me. Of course not. But if you're this unhappy, you should have told me earlier. We need to get you to a healer. It took me a moment, emotionally distracted as I was, to understand. A healer?
You want me to skip? No one would think badly of that choice, Wanderer. It's understood. If a host is defective... Defective? She's not defective. I am. I'm too weak for this world. My head fell into my hands as the humiliation washed through me. Fresh tears welled in my eyes. Kathy's arms settled around my shoulders. I was struggling so hard to control my wild emotions that I didn't pull away, though it felt too intimate. It bothered Melanie, too. She didn't like being hugged by an alien. Of course, Melanie was very much present in this moment, and unbearably smug as I finally admitted to her power. She was gleeful! It was always harder to control her when I was distracted by emotion like this. I tried to calm myself, so that I would be able to put her in her place. You are in my place. Her thought was faint, but intelligible. How much worse it was getting. She was strong enough to speak to me now whenever she wished. It was as bad as that first minute of consciousness. Go away. It's my place now.
Never.
Wanderer, dear, no. You are not weak, and we both know that. Listen to me. You are strong, surprisingly strong. Our kind are always so much the same, but you exceed the norm. You're so brave it astonishes me. Your past lives are a testament to that. My past lives, maybe, but this life? Where was my strength now? But humans are more individualized than we are, Kathy went on. There's quite a range. And some of them are much stronger than others. I truly believe that if anyone else had been put into this host, Melanie would have crushed them in days. Maybe it's an accident, maybe it's fate, but it appears to me that the strongest of our kind is being hosted by the strongest of theirs. Doesn't say much for our kind, does it? She heard the implication behind my words. She's not winning, Wanderer. You are this lovely person beside me. She's just a shadow in the corner of your mind. She speaks to me, Kathy. She still thinks her own thoughts. She still keeps her secrets. But she doesn't speak for you, does she? I doubt I would be able to say as much in your place. I didn't respond. I was feeling too miserable. I think you should consider reimplantation. Kathy, you just said that she would crush a different soul. I don't know if I believe that. You're probably just trying to do your job and comfort me. But if she is so strong, it wouldn't be fair to hand her off to someone else because I can't subdue her. Who would you choose to take her on? I didn't say that to comfort you, dear. Then what? I don't think this host would be considered for reuse.
Oh!
A shiver of horror jolted down my spine, and I wasn't the only one who was staggered by the idea. I was immediately repulsed. I was no quitter. Through the long revolutions around the suns of my last planet, the world of the sea weeds, as they were known here, I had waited. Though the permanence of being rooted began to wear long before I'd thought it would, though the lives of the sea weeds would measure in centuries on this planet, I had not skipped out on the life term of my host. To do so was wasteful, wrong. Ungrateful. It mocked the very essence of who we were as souls. We made our worlds better places. That was absolutely essential, or we did not deserve them. But we were not wasteful. We did make whatever we took better, more peaceful and beautiful. And the humans were brutish and ungovernable. They had killed one another so frequently that murder had been an accepted part of life. The various tortures they'd devised over the few millennia they'd lasted had been too much for me. I hadn't been able to bear even the dry official overviews. Wars had raged over the face of nearly every continent. Sanctioned murder, ordered and viciously effective. Those who lived in peaceful nations had looked the other way as members of their own species starved on their doorstep. There was no equality to the distribution of the planet's bounteous resources. Most vile yet, their offspring,
The next generation, which my kind nearly worshipped for their promise, had all too often been victims of heinous crimes, and not just at the hands of strangers, but at the hands of the caretakers they were entrusted to. Even the huge sphere of the planet had been put into jeopardy through their careless and greedy mistakes. No one could compare what had been and what was now, and not admit that Earth was a better place thanks to us. You murder an entire species and then pat yourselves on the back. My hands balled up into fists. I could have you disposed of, I reminded her. Go ahead. Make my murder official. I was bluffing, but so was Melanie. Oh, she thought she wanted to die. She'd thrown herself into the elevator shaft, after all. But that was in a moment of panic and defeat. To consider it calmly from a comfortable chair was something else altogether. I could feel the adrenaline called into being by her fear, shoot through my limbs as I considered switching to a more pliant body. It would be nice to be alone again, to have my mind to myself. This world was very pleasant in so many novel ways, and it would be wonderful to be able to appreciate it without the distractions of an angry, displaced non-entity who should have had better sense than to linger unwanted this way. Melanie squirmed, figuratively, in the recesses of my head as I tried to consider it rationally. Maybe I should give up. The words themselves made me flinch. I, wanderer, give up? Quit? Admit failure and try again with a weak, spineless host who wouldn't give me any trouble? I shook my head. I could barely stand to think of it. And this was my body. I was used to the feel of it. I liked the way the muscles moved over the bones, the bend of the joints and the pull of the tendons. I knew the reflection in the mirror. The sun-browned skin, the high, sharp bones of my face, the short silk cap of mahogany hair, the muddy green-brown hazel of my eyes. This was me. I wanted myself. I wouldn't let what was mine be destroyed. Chapter 6 Followed. The light was finally fading outside the windows. The day, hot for March, had lingered on and on, as if reluctant to end and set me free. I sniffled and twisted the wet handkerchief into another knot. Kathy, you must have other obligations. Kurt will be wondering where you are. He'll understand. I can't stay here forever, and we're no closer to an answer than before. Quick fixes aren't my specialty. You are decided against a new host? Yes. So dealing with this will probably take some time. I clenched my teeth in frustration. And it will go faster and more smoothly if you have some help. I'll be better with making my appointments, I promise. That's not exactly what I mean, though I hope you will. You mean help? Other than you? I cringed at the thought of having to relive today's misery with a stranger. I'm sure you're just as qualified as any comforter. More so. I didn't mean another comforter. She shifted her weight in the chair and stretched stiffly. How many friends do you have, Wanderer? You mean people at work? I see a few other teachers almost every day. There are several students I speak to in the halls. Outside of the school? I stared at her blankly. Human hosts need interaction. You're not used to solitude, dear. You shared an entire planet's thoughts. We didn't go out much. My attempt at humor fell flat. She smiled slightly and went on. You're struggling so hard with your problem that it's all you can concentrate on. Maybe one answer is to not concentrate quite so hard. You said Melanie grows bored during your working hours, that she is more dormant. Perhaps if you developed some peer relationships, those would bore her also. I pursed my lips thoughtfully. Melanie, sluggish from the long day of attempted comfort, did seem rather unenthused by the idea. Kathy nodded. Get involved with life, rather than with her. That makes sense. And then there are the physical drives these bodies have. I've never seen or heard of their equal. One of the most difficult things we of the first wave had to conquer was the mating instinct. Believe me, the humans noticed when you didn't. She grinned and rolled her eyes at some memory. When I didn't react as she'd expected, she sighed and crossed her arms impatiently. Oh, come on now, Wanderer. You must have noticed. Well, of course, I mumbled. Melanie stirred restlessly. Obviously. I've told you about the dreams.
No, I didn't mean just memories.
Haven't you come across anyone that your body has responded to in the present? On strictly a chemical level? I thought her question through carefully. I don't think so. Not so I've noticed.
Trust me, Kathy said dryly. You'd notice.
She shook her head. Perhaps you should open your eyes and look around for that specifically. It might do you a lot of good. My body recoiled from the thought. I registered Melanie's disgust, mirrored by my own. Kathy read my expression. Don't let her control how you interact with your kind, Wanderer. Don't let her control you. My nostrils flared. I waited a moment to answer, reining in the anger that I'd never quite gotten used to. She does not control me. Kathy raised an eyebrow. The anger tightened my throat. You did not look too far afield for your current partner. Was that choice controlled? She ignored my anger and considered the question thoughtfully. Perhaps, she finally said. It's hard to know. But you've made your point. She picked at a string in the hem of her shirt, and then, as if realizing that she was avoiding my gaze, folded her hands resolutely and squared her shoulders. Who knows how much comes from any given host on any given planet? As I said before, I think time is probably your answer. Whether she grows apathetic and silent gradually, allowing you to make another choice besides this Jared, or... Well, the Seekers are very good. They're already looking for him. And maybe you'll remember something that helps. I didn't move as her meaning sank in. She didn't seem to notice that I was frozen in place. Perhaps they'll find Melanie's love, and then you can be together. If his feelings are as fervent as hers, the new soul will probably be amenable. No! I wasn't sure who had shouted. It could have been me. I was full of horror, too. I was on my feet, shaking. The tears that came so easily were, for once, absent, and my hands trembled in tight fists. Wanderer? But I turned and ran for the door, fighting the words that could not come out of my mouth, words that could not be my words, words that made no sense unless they were hers, but they felt like mine. They couldn't be mine. They couldn't be spoken. That's killing him! That's making him cease to be! I don't want someone else! I want Jared, not a stranger in his body. The body means nothing without him. I heard Kathy calling my name behind me as I ran into the road. I didn't live far from the comforter's office, but the darkness in the street disoriented me. I'd gone 2 blocks before I realized I was running in the wrong direction. People were looking at me. I wasn't dressed for exercise, and I wasn't jogging, I was fleeing. But no one bothered me, they politely averted their eyes. They would guess that I was new to this host, acting out the way a child would. I slowed to a walk, turning north so that I could loop around without passing Kathy's office again. My walk was only slightly slower than a run. I heard my feet hitting the sidewalk too quickly, as though they were trying to match the tempo of a dance song. Slap, slap, slap.
against the concrete. No, it wasn't like a drum beat. It was too angry, like violence.
Slap, slap, slap.
Someone hitting someone else. I shuddered away from the horrible image. I could see the lamp on over my apartment door. It hadn't taken me long to cover the distance. I didn't cross the road, though. I felt sick. I remembered what it felt like to vomit, though I never had. The cold wetness dewed on my forehead. The hollow sound rang in my ears. I was pretty sure I was about to have that experience for my own. There was a bank of grass beside the walk. Around a street lamp there was a well-trimmed hedge. I had no time to look for a better place. I stumbled to the light and caught the post to hold myself up. The nausea was making me dizzy. Yes, I was definitely going to experience throwing up.
Wanderer, is that you? Wanderer, are you ill?
The vaguely familiar voice was impossible to concentrate on, but it made things worse knowing I had an audience as I leaned my face close to the bush and violently choked up my most recent meal.
Who's your healer here? The voice asked.
It sounded far away through the buzzing in my ears. A hand touched my arched back.
Do you need an ambulance?
I coughed twice and shook my head. I was sure it was over. My stomach was empty. I'm not ill, I said as I pulled myself upright using the lamppost for support. I looked over to see who was watching my moment of disgrace. The seeker from Chicago had her cell phone in her hand, trying to decide which authority to call. I took one good look at her and bent over the leaves again. Empty stomach or no, she was the last person I needed to see right now. But as my stomach heaved uselessly, I realized that there would be a reason for her presence.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no!
Why? I gasped, panic and sickness stealing the volume from my voice.
Why are you here? What's happened?
The comforter's very uncomforting words pounded in my head. I stared at the hands gripping the collar of the seeker's black suit for 2 seconds before I realized they were mine.
Stop, she said, and there was outrage on her face.
Her voice rattled. I was shaking her. My hands jerked open and landed against my face.
Excuse me, I huffed. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was doing.
The seeker scowled at me and smoothed the front of her outfit.
You're not well. And I suppose I startled you.
I wasn't expecting to see you, I whispered.
Why are you here? Let's get you to a healing facility before we speak. If you have a flu, you should get it healed. There's no point in letting it wear your body down.
I don't have a flu. I'm not ill.
Did you eat bad food? You must report where you got it.
Her prying was very annoying.
I did not eat bad food either. I'm healthy. Why don't you have a healer check? A quick scan. You shouldn't neglect your host. That's irresponsible, especially when health care is so easy and effective.
I took a deep breath and resisted the urge to shake her again. She was a full head shorter than I was. It was a fight I would win.
A fight?
I turned away from her and walked swiftly toward my home. I was dangerously emotional. I needed to calm down before I did something inexcusable.
Wanderer, wait! The healer...
I need no healer, I said without turning. That was just an emotional imbalance. I'm fine now. The seeker didn't answer. I wondered what she made of my response. I could hear her shoes, high heels, tapping after me, so I left the door open, knowing she would follow me in. I went to the sink and filled a glass with water. She waited silently while I rinsed my mouth and spat. When I was through, I leaned against the counter, staring into the basin. She was soon bored.
So, Wanderer, or do you still go by that name?
I don't mean to be rude in calling you that.
I didn't look at her. I still go by Wanderer.
Interesting. I pegged you for one that would choose her own.
I did choose. I chose Wanderer.
It had long been clear to me that the mild spat I'd overheard the first day I woke in the healing facility was the Seeker's fault. The Seeker was the most confrontational soul I'd come across in 9 lives. My first healer, Ford's Deep Waters, had been calm, kind, and wise, even for a soul. Yet he had not been able to help reacting to her. That made me feel better about my own response. I turned around to face her. She was on my small couch, nestled in comfortably as if for a long visit. Her expression was self-satisfied, the bulging eyes amused. I controlled the desire to scowl. "Why are you here?" I asked again.
My voice was a monotone, restrained.
I would not lose control again in front of this woman. "It's been a while since I heard anything from you, so I thought I would check in personally. We've still made no headway in your case."
My hands clamped down on the edge of the counter behind me, but I kept the wild relief from my voice. "That seems overzealous.
Besides, I sent you a message last night." Her eyebrows came together in that way she had, a way that made her look angry and annoyed at the same time, as if you, not she, were responsible for her anger. She pulled out her palm computer and touched the screen a few times. "Oh," she said stiffly. "I haven't checked my mail today."
She was quiet as she scanned through what I had written.
"I sent it very early in the morning," I said. "I was half asleep at the time. I'm not sure how much of what I wrote was memory or dream or sleep typing, maybe."
I went along with the words, Melanie's words, as they flowed easily from my mouth. I even added my own light-hearted laugh at the end. It was dishonest of me. Shameful behavior. But I would not let the Seeker know that I was weaker than my host. For once, Melanie was not smug at having bested me. She was too relieved, too grateful that I had not, for my own petty reasons, given her away.
"Interesting," the Seeker murmured. "Another one on the loose."
She shook her head.
"Peace continues to elude us."
She did not seem dismayed by the idea of a fragile peace. Rather, it seemed to please her. I bit my lip hard. Melanie wanted so badly to make another denial, to claim the boy was just part of a dream.
"Don't be stupid," I told her. "That would be so obvious." It said much for the repellent nature of the Seeker that she could put Melanie and me on the same side of an argument.
"I hate her."
"I know. I know."
I wished I could deny that I felt similarly. Hate was an unforgivable emotion, but the Seeker was very difficult to like, impossible.
The Seeker interrupted my internal conversation.
"So, other than the new location to review, you have no more help for me on the roadmaps?"
I felt my body react to her critical tone. "I never said they were lines on a road map.
That's your assumption.
And no, I have nothing else." She clicked her tongue quickly 3 times.
"But you said they were directions."
"That's what I think they are. I'm not getting anything more."
"Why not? Haven't you subdued the human yet?"
She laughed loudly, laughing at me. I turned my back to her and concentrated on calming myself. I tried to pretend that she wasn't there, that I was all alone in my austere kitchen, staring out the window into the little patch of night sky, at the 3 bright stars I could see through it. Well, as alone as I ever was. While I stared at the tiny points of light in the blackness,
the lines that I'd seen over and over again, in my dreams and in my broken memories, cropping up at strange, unrelated moments, flashed through my head. The first, a slow, rough curve, then a sharp turn north, another sharp turn back the other way, twisting back to the north for a longer stretch, and then the abrupt southern decline that flattened out into another shallow curve. The second, a ragged zigzag, four tight switchbacks, the fifth point strangely blunt, like it was broken. The third, a smooth wave interrupted by a sudden spur that swung a thin, long finger out to the north and back. Incomprehensible, seemingly meaningless, but I knew this was important to Melanie. From the very beginning I'd known that. She protected this secret more fiercely than any other, next to the boy, her brother. I'd had no idea of his existence before the dream last night. I wondered what it was that had broken her. Maybe as she grew louder in my head, she would lose more of her secrets to me. Maybe she would slip up, and I would see what these strange lines meant. I knew they meant something, that they led somewhere. And at that moment, with the echo of the Seeker's laugh still hanging in the air, I suddenly realized why they were so important. They led back to Jared, of course. Back to both of them. Jared and Jamie. Where else? What other location could possibly hold any meaning for her? Only now I saw that it was not back, because none of them had ever followed these lines before. Lines that had been as much of a mystery to her as they were to me until... The wall was slow to block me. She was distracted, paying more attention to the Seeker than I was. She fluttered in my head at a sound behind me, and that was the first I was aware of the Seeker's approach. The Seeker sighed.
I expected more of you. Your track record seemed so promising.
It's a pity you weren't free for the assignment yourself. I'm sure if you'd had to deal with a resistant host, it would have been child's play. I didn't turn to look at her. My voice stayed level. She sniffed.
The early waves were challenging enough even without a resistant host.
Yes. I've experienced a few settlings myself. The Seeker snorted.
Were the sea weeds very difficult to tame?
Did they flee?
I kept my voice calm. We had no trouble in the South Pole. Of course, the North was another matter. It was badly mishandled. We lost the entire forest. The sadness of that time echoed behind my words. A thousand sentient beings, closing their eyes forever rather than accept us. They'd curled their leaves from the suns and starved.
Good for them, Melanie whispered.
There was no venom attached to the thought, only approval as she saluted the tragedy in my memory. It was such a waste. I let the agony of the knowledge, the feel of the dying thoughts that had racked us with our sister forest's pain, wash through my head. It was death either way. The Seeker spoke, and I tried to concentrate on just one conversation.
Yes, her voice was uncomfortable. That was poorly executed.
You can never be too careful when it comes to doling out power. Some aren't as careful as they should be. She didn't answer, and I heard her move a few steps back. Everyone knew that the misstep behind the mass suicide belonged to the Seekers, who, because the sea weeds couldn't flee, had underestimated their ability to escape. They'd proceeded recklessly, beginning the first settlement before we had adequate numbers in place for a full-scale assimilation. By the time they realized what the sea weeds were capable of, were willing to do, it was too late. The next shipment of hibernating souls was too far away, and before they'd arrived, the northern forest was lost. I faced the Seeker now, curious to judge the impact of my words. She was impassive, staring at the white nothingness of the bare wall across the room.
I'm sorry I can't help you further.
I said the words firmly, trying to make the dismissal clear. I was ready to have my house to myself again.
To ourselves, Melanie inserted spitefully.
I sighed. She was so full of herself now.
You really shouldn't have troubled yourself to come so far.
It's the job, the Seeker said, shrugging. You're my only assignment. Until I find the rest of them, I may as well stick close to you and hope I get lucky.
Chapter 7 Confronted. Yes, faces sunward? I asked, grateful to the raised hand for interrupting my lecture. I did not feel as comfortable behind the lectern as I usually did. My biggest strength, my only real credential, for my host body had had little in the way of a formal education, on the run since her early adolescence, was the personal experience I usually taught from. This was the first world's history I'd presented this semester for which I had no memories to draw upon. I was sure my students were suffering the difference.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but...
The white-haired man paused, struggling to word his question.
I'm not sure I understand. The fire tasters actually ingest the smoke from burning the walking flowers? Like food?
He tried to suppress the horror in his tone. It was not a soul's place to judge another soul. But I was not surprised, given his background on the planet of the flowers, at his strong reaction to the fate of a similar life form on another world.
It was always amazing to me how some souls buried themselves in the affairs of whichever world they inhabited and ignored the rest of the universe. But to be fair, perhaps Faces Sunward had been in hibernation when Fireworld became notorious.
Yes, they receive essential nutrients from this smoke, and therein lies the fundamental dilemma and the controversy of Fireworld, and the reason the planet has not been closed, though there has certainly been adequate time to populate it fully. There is also a high relocation percentage. When Fireworld was discovered, it was at first thought that the dominant species, the fire tasters, were the only intelligent life forms present. The fire tasters did not consider the walking flowers to be their equals, a cultural prejudice, so it was a while, even after the first wave of settling, before the souls realized they were murdering intelligent creatures. Since then, Fireworld scientists have focused their efforts on finding a replacement for the dietary needs of the fire tasters. Spiders are being transported there to help, but the planets are hundreds of light years apart. When this obstacle is overcome, as it will be soon, I'm sure, there is hope that the walking flowers might also be assimilated. In the meantime, much of the brutality has been removed from the equation. The, burning alive portion, of course, and other aspects as well.
How can they...
Faces Sunward trailed off, unable to finish. Another voice completed Faces Sunward's thought.
It seems like a very cruel ecosystem. Why was the planet not abandoned?
That has been debated naturally, Robert. But we do not abandon planets lightly. There are many souls for whom Fireworld is home. They will not be uprooted against their will. I looked away, back at my notes, in an attempt to end the side discussion.
But it's barbaric!
Robert was physically younger than most of the other students, closer to my age, in fact, than any other, and truly a child, in a more important way. Earth was his first world. The mother in this case had actually been an Earth-dweller, too, before she'd given herself. And he didn't seem to have as much perspective as older, better-traveled souls. I wondered what it would be like to be born into the overwhelming sensation and emotion of these hosts, with no prior experience for balance. It would be difficult to find objectivity. I tried to remember that and be especially patient as I answered him.
Every world is a unique experience. Unless one has lived on that world, it's impossible to truly understand them.
But you never lived on the fire world, he interrupted me. You must have felt the same way, unless you had some other reason for skipping that planet. You've been almost everywhere else.
Choosing a planet is a very personal and private decision, Robert, as you may someday experience. My tone closed the subject absolutely.
Why not tell them? You do think it's barbaric, and cruel, and wrong. Which is pretty ironic if you ask me.
Not that you ever do.
What's the problem? Are you ashamed that you agree with Robert? Because he's more human than the other?